Hello, welcome once again to Leto's Law. I'm Steve Leto. Today we're going to talk about cruel and unusual punishment. Thanks, David. Someone sent me a note and said, Steve, I'm curious about this cruel and unusual punishment thing. First of all, where did it come from? Second of all, does it matter that's cruel and unusual versus cruel or unusual? And it's kind of interesting because this is the kind of stuff that lawyers often talk about, especially in front of judges when we're discussing how to interpret a statute. And people who are not attorneys often wonder if we're making a big deal out of nothing. And interestingly, the world would be a very different place if the Eighth Amendment to our Constitution actually said that cruel or unusual punishments are forbidden. But in fact, it's cruel and unusual. So we'll talk about that. But yes, it comes from our Eighth Amendment, and there is a ban against cruel and unusual punishments. And that's what we call a conjunctive. That is the this and that. If it was this or that, it would be disjunctive. And so the point is that for it to be constitutionally prohibited punishment under the Eighth Amendment, it has to be both cruel and unusual. Okay? If it was cruel or unusual, all bets would be off. So one of the things that people first of all ask me is they say, you know, how do you determine what is cruel? How do you determine what is unusual? Well, I'll have you know, in a case called Furman versus Georgia, the U.S. Supreme Court actually laid out some guidelines and said, here's how you determine what is cruel and unusual punishment, which we forbid. And four things. The punishment must not, by its severity, be degrading to human dignity. And this is especially regarding torture. So you'll know this, that in American culture, we've never allowed torture as a punishment for something, okay? Now, people say, well, Steve, they kill people. Capital punishment. Isn't that cruel? And the point here is, yes, capital punishment is the ultimate cruelty. You kill somebody, right? But the point is that it is cruel, but it was not unusual because capital punishment has been around for a very, very long time and has been acceptable in our jurisprudence as long as we've been a country, back when there were colonies and back before that when many people came over from Europe. Most European communities back then allowed for capital punishment in certain situations. So capital punishment by itself was not considered cruel and unusual. It was cruel, but usual. It was something that was done. So they point out that the degrading to human dignity is how they define it, but they're talking pretty much about torture. So you couldn't say in an American courtroom setting, this person's guilty of something, we're going to execute them, but before we execute them, we're going to torture them. Now, some people are going to say, but Steve, there's been an argument raised about the forms of execution, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But the concept, just the general concept, can somebody be executed for committing a crime in America and not run afoul of the Eighth Amendment? And the answer to that is yes. I will tell you that not all states have capital punishment. For those of you who are unaware of this, Michigan, for instance, does not and hasn't had it for a long time. We got rid of it a long, long time ago. And the only people executed in Michigan legally, and there have been a couple since that came down, were found guilty of committing federal crimes. And under a federal crime, in theory, if you commit it in Michigan, you'd still be executed potentially, but it wouldn't be the state executing you in the sense of the state of Michigan. It would be the state as in the U.S. government. Second of all, of the four rules, a severe punishment that is obviously inflicted in a wholly arbitrary fashion would be considered cruel and unusual. So if they simply said, okay, we're going to execute murderers, but we're only going to execute these ones over here, but not those ones over here, or we're going to do it based on race, or we're going to do it based on social standing, or we're going to do it based on some other thing, but we're going to do it arbitrarily, that wouldn't make any sense at all, and that would be considered cruel and unusual under the Furman versus Georgia ruling. A severe punishment that is clearly and totally rejected throughout society. I have to imagine, for instance, you know, cutting someone's hand off for stealing. We've heard of societies that do that. We don't do that here. And that'd be considered a severe punishment, clearly and totally rejected throughout this society. And then finally, a severe punishment that is patently unnecessary. That is, you're doing a punishment And everyone looks at it and goes, why are they doing that? Eh, doing it because they, you know, somebody's a sadistic person, or doing it because they're trying to prove a point about something. You know, so those are the four rules on cruel and unusual punishment. I understand there's probably one or two constitutional scholars right now who are watching going, Steve, but you glossed over it. I glossed over it, dude. I'm sorry. Okay. But I simply want to discuss this idea about cruel and unusual punishment and how that's actually caused some things to happen in our society and things we look at. Because it's not often a fight over the type of punishment. We're you know, generally speaking, you get in trouble in America, you can get fined. You can lose your driving privileges if you were involved in a driving situation. You can be imprisoned. You can be jailed. And people say, isn't that the same thing? Technically, kind of, but not really. If you're jailed, it's considered to be a different thing if you get put into a penal system and you're imprisoned, and things like that. And then also you might have some of your rights taken away from you after you get out of jail. You might be put on a sex offender list if that's what you got in trouble for. You might lose other rights you have based on your criminal record, and so on. So cruel and unusual punishment, I'm getting this now from the Cornell Law website. They discuss a bunch of different ways that they can talk about it. But specifically, it prohibits cruel and unusual punishment, but does not give more guidance than that. And so courts, especially the Supreme Court, have heard a number of cases which have given guidance to what is cruel and unusual punishment. So for instance, the proportionality of sentence. The sentence has got to have some connection and proportional relationship to what the crime is. If you got arrested for jaywalking and they executed you for that, that would be disproportional. The Supreme Court held in 1983, the sentence may not be disproportionate to the crime committed, regardless of whether the crime is a felony or a misdemeanor. To measure proportionality, the court must look at several factors, which include the severity of the offense, the harshness of the penalty, the sentences imposed on others within the same jurisdiction, and the sentences imposed on others in different jurisdictions. And that's something that sociologists love to do, is they'll break down people who are sentenced for crimes they've been convicted of, and then break down that group of people who've been convicted on things like race and where they come from and where they live and their, you know, economic backgrounds. And once in a while, disturbing trends appear. Let's just put it that way. The Supreme Court later overturned the prohibition on disproportionate sentences in a case called Harmelin versus Michigan, but stated that in extreme cases, a disproportionate sentence could still violate the Eighth Amendment. This opinion was later affirmed in Lockyer versus Andrade, holding that a gross proportionality requirement is only available in exceedingly rare and extreme cases. So again, here we are in the 21st century, and the Supreme Court is still redefining what cruel and unusual is. And that's what happens sometimes with the law. Also now, the age of the defendant. Juvenile, non-homicide offenders. The Supreme Court does consider age when determining the constitutionality of imprisonment. The Supreme Court held in 2010 that juvenile, non-homicide offenders, it was unconstitutional for a court to assign life imprisonment without parole. Further, if a court does impose a life sentence, it must also provide the offender with a realistic opportunity to obtain release. And they found that it was cruel and unusual to say take a 14-year-old, who in some states can be tried as an adult, but if he's tried as a juvenile, he's just a juvenile non-homicide offender, it would be unconstitutional to sentence that person to life without a chance for parole. I know that after that case came down, a whole bunch of people who were sentenced that way in Michigan filed motions to have their sentences looked at. And in many cases, they simply changed it to, okay, now you got life with a chance of parole. Knock yourself out. In Miller versus Alabama, the court expanded on Graham, holding that life imprisonment without parole is unconstitutional for juvenile homicide offenders. So it doesn't matter what you did. If you were a juvenile at the time you did it, it's unconstitutional. And the thinking is it's cruel and unusual to say so. In Ingram versus Wright, the Supreme Court stated that the unnecessary and wanton infliction of pain constitutes cruel and unusual punishment when someone is beaten in jail or beaten in prison. And, you know, it's one of those things where a lot of people in our culture have a hard time feeling much sympathy for prisoners. You say, oh, guy went to prison. He probably deserved it. Okay? Well, every now and then you hear about somebody who went to prison who didn't deserve it. And of course, you're put in prison and the punishment is that you are imprisoned and you've lost your ability to go do things generally with your life you'd like to do. You're stuck in a little cage, for lack of a better word. But prison beatings and other things that could be visited upon your body are not why you've been put there, okay? So the idea that if a penal system is aware of the fact that people are routinely being beaten, whether it's by guards or other prisoners, and they do nothing about it and say, hey, that's part of the price of doing what you did. No. It turns out Supreme Court says if that's the case, that could be cruel and unusual punishment. You're going to probably want to clean up that system a little bit. It does say, by the way, that if the infliction of pain is being done in a good faith effort to restore discipline, it could be considered okay. Using the standard, however, the Supreme Court found that a prisoner's Eighth Amendment right was violated when the prisoner was handcuffed to a hitching post for 7 hours, taunted, and denied bathroom breaks. The court reasoned that this treatment exceeded what was necessary to restore order. You know, once in a while, again, you hear these stories coming out of prisons and you go, really? They did that? And then you always hear the story from the side of the prison people saying, you know, the guards and so on. You know, this guy was doing the craziest stuff. I understand that, okay? But, you know. In Hudson versus McMillan, the U.S. Supreme Court in 1992 held that a prisoner does not need to experience significant injury by prison guards in order to suffer an Eighth Amendment violation. Rather, if the guards acted maliciously and sadistically to punish the prisoner, then that punishment would be cruel and unusual and would accordingly violate the Eighth Amendment. By the way, when we're talking about this being cruel and unusual and therefore violative of the Eighth Amendment, we're not saying the person then gets out of prison. We're simply saying that there's something wrong here and it might be they're entitled to some kind of compensation. Might be entitled. I'm not saying they all are, but we've all heard the stories, you know, where something gets out of hand and the prison guards kill somebody, oops, and try to pretend like, oh, that's just part of the doing business. And well, it turns out that if that violated the Eighth Amendment, it might be then something for which someone could be compensated. The conditions of confinement also have been found to be problems with cruel and unusual punishment, such as deliberate indifference. The Supreme Court established the Eighth Amendment may be violated due to factors related to a prisoner's confinement. A prison grounds deliberate indifference to a prisoner's serious illness. I'm sorry, a prison guard's deliberate indifference to a prisoner's serious illness or injury would constitute cruel and unusual punishment, which would violate the Eighth Amendment. We've all seen those cases where somebody gets arrested, they're being held, and or they are being processed, or they're in the prison system, and they get violently ill, or they're injured, or they need medical attention, and it's not provided to them. That kind of deliberate indifference can be a violation of the Eighth Amendment. Likewise, overcrowding. In 2011, the court held that a prison overcrowding situation in California was unconstitutional because the living conditions resulted in medical care violations. The court reasoned that prisoners would suffer and could die if they did not receive adequate medical care. And so the simple point is that you got a prison, it's got an administrator, the warden probably, and it's got a bunch of guards, and it's got a bunch of other people who work there, clerical staff, secretarial staff, and they might even have a place where there's doctors, and they take care of people in a medical ward, and the medical ward can probably handle so many people, and they can probably do the math on what kind of a prison population can be served by how many doctors in the ward. And it turns out if you start overcrowding the prisons, it gets to the point where it overcrowds and overflows the other things within the prison. It's not just that there's five guys jammed in a cell designed for three. It's now you got people who are sick seeking medical help and a doctor's going, I can't get to all you people. Sorry, I can only get to these people, or I get to the first ones, or I get to the worst ones, whatever. But the point is that kind of overcrowding can lead to a violation of the Eighth Amendment. So again, for those of you who are curious, the cruel and unusual punishment prohibition comes to us from the Eighth Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. It's a common concept. It goes way back in English law, and it's actually accepted in many Western cultures. And generally speaking, it's something that most people embrace, but many people aren't aware of why it's so important that it's cruel and unusual versus cruel or unusual. But again, that's what we're talking about. So cruel and unusual punishment. That's what you got. Thanks, David, for the concept being suggested to me. As always, Questions or comments, fire them to me below. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.